This is the Whole Hog Sports Football Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, featuring interviews, analysis, and feature stories on Arkansas football. Now, from Fayetteville, here's your host, Seth Campbell.
His guys outplayed us, they outcoached us, and it was very, very disappointed in the effort that we got tonight. For three quarters, they were the SEC football team.
Nick Nash, the team's leading rusher. He will keep it here. Boy, look at him dance around and finds the end zone.
You get what you deserve in life. We didn't deserve to win this football game.
Holiness inside the 10, to the goal line, touchdown, Spartans, 26 yards. This one is just a shocking outcome.
While the Hogs lick their wounds against the Spartans, they must prepare for the Aggies, who are just looking for a tune-up before Alabama.
We just want to dominate, coming out from the jump and just dominate, because there's no reason why we shouldn't be dominating the game.
After seven straight losses, can the Hogs beat the Aggies for the first time since A&M joined the SEC? From Whole Hog Sports, I'm Seth Campbell, and this is the Whole Hog Football Podcast. On today's show, we'll talk about a game between the Hogs and Aggies with high stakes and even higher rewards. We'll also talk to Robert Cezina, who is a writer for the Eagle, and he covers the Aggies. Then we'll wrap it up with the most experienced Razorback roundtable out there, as Tom Murphy, Dudley Dawson, and Scotty Bordelon discuss the Hogs game against Texas A&M. But first, a word from our sponsor, Massage Envy.
Massage Envy, voted the top day spa in all of Northwest Arkansas, now is even better with the addition of Jammarini and Obagi skincare services and products. These exciting new lines are provided, as well as a serum-infused microdermabrasion and chemical peels. Our face is one of the most important features that we have. Proper skincare services and products will enhance and protect your face, while the benefits, well, they could extend a lifetime. No matter your gender, come by either clinic in Rogers or Fayetteville today for your introductory session.
It may be the abysmal showing from Arkansas the past few seasons.
Touchdown, Spartans, back out in front.
It may be the sting of losing seven straight to a longtime rival.
Story with a shot down the sideline. It's intercepted. Donovan Wilson playing center field. Comes over and ends the game for A&M. Play action. Allen looking end zone. Intercepted, and that'll end the game.
It may be the fact that half of Razorback Nation turned off their TVs, vowing not to watch the Hogs the rest of the season. Whatever the reason, Aggie jokes this year just don't land the same punch. It's hard to get everyone to laugh with you when they just seem to be pointing the finger at you. But with what looks to be another bleak season ahead of the Hogs, let's go back and visit a time when Aggie jokes were easy to tell and A&M's head coach was, as he put it, quote, embarrassed for Aggies everywhere. Take yourself back to 1975. The Vietnam War ended in April. Sony released the first Betamax, while JVC released the first VHS players, and the very first blockbuster movie, Jaws, hit theaters that summer. The football Razorbacks have had a great year. In his 18th season as head man, legendary coach Frank Broyles has led the Hogs to an 8-2 record. The Hogs have suffered losses to non-conference foe Oklahoma State and rival Texas, but they have a chance to do something they haven't done since 1968, win a conference title. Meanwhile, their foe at the end of the season, Texas A&M, was a perfect 10-0 and had just beaten their rivals, the Texas Longhorns, the week before. A&M was staring directly at a fourth national championship, which would be their first since 1939. The only thing that was standing in their way? A trip to Little Rock to face the Razorbacks. Head coach Frank Broyles was in a unique position. He had watched from a television booth as the Aggies beat the Longhorns the week before. Having seen A&M in person, Broyles gathered his troops and came up with a defensive game plan. It worked. The Aggies were held scoreless in the first half, and thanks to a pass from Scott Bull to Teddy Barnes, with 34 seconds in the second quarter, the Hogs had a 7-0 lead. It was just the second time the Aggies were behind at halftime. Then in the second half, the football turned from a pigskin to a greased pig, and the porkers from Arkansas had no problem taking advantage. The Aggies fumbled 5 times in the second half alone, and Arkansas walloped A&M 31-6. The Razorbacks tied for first in the Southwestern Conference and accepted a bid to the Cotton Bowl, where they beat Georgia 31-10 for their first victory over a current SEC team in a bowl game. The Aggies lost their national championship hopes and their next game in the Liberty Bowl against Southern California. So, about those Aggie jokes. How many Razorbacks does it take to beat the Aggies? Well, in 1975, it took none. The Aggies did it all by themselves.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. One reason is our great therapists and estheticians. Due to increased demand with our new services in both massage and skincare, Massage Envy is now looking for talented, licensed providers to join our great team. A competitive compensation package and family-like environment are just some of the reasons our providers have worked nearly 10 years with Massage Envy. Looking for a great career? Come by our clinics in Rogers or Fayetteville and apply today.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
I mean, it's been frustrating. It's been a close game pretty much every time. But, you know, it just comes down to who wants it more and who executes the best.
Running back Devoir Whaley on A&M beating Arkansas 7 straight games. Welcome into the Whole Hog Football Podcast. Robert Cessna joining me, Seth Campbell. Robert's a writer for the Eagle located in the Bryan College Station area, and he's been covering Texas A&M. And so, Robert, I want to start with this. What were your expectations of Texas A&M coming into year two under Jimbo Fisher? And through one third of the season, has he met those expectations?
I think most people saw when you looked at the regular season, they'd be 8-4. They had the 4 tough games coming up, you know, against Clemson, LSU, Alabama, and Georgia. You know, I felt when you looked at who they had to replace, there was a chance they could beat one of those teams and they could lose to another one of those teams that you feel they're going to beat. However, when you started looking at breaking down A&M versus Clemson, A&M versus Alabama, they're just not easy matchups. So the way the schedule works, considering Alabama was the only game at home. So, you know, it wasn't a good matchup, a good schedule, but everybody's always optimistic. But that optimism kind of took a huge hit last week with Auburn. That's the game I think everyone circled that A&M would win. And, of course, now that A&M has lost it, it's a little bit the sky is falling because now everybody's got to regroup a little bit. So you can definitely see record-wise, that they could take a step backward. It's still to be determined is, will they take a step backward in their progress? They are having a lot of new people. They still have a chance to beat Alabama, Georgia, LSU. But the team that I saw last week, I think will have a rough time winning any of those three games.
And what was the main takeaway that you saw from that Auburn game?
I think, you know, the immediate knee-jerk reaction was after the Clemson loss, a lot fell on Mond's shoulders. Everybody wanted, a lot of people wanted to throw him out of the bus, under the bus. But I think a lot of people saw last week, A&M's offensive line has issues. When they lost Eric McCoy last year, they didn't lose the quarterback of the team, but they lost the quarterback of the line. He's starting for the New Orleans Saints. They have not been able to replace him or even Keaton Sutherland on the practice squad for Cincinnati. And not only that, tied in Jake Sternberger, NFL, leading rusher, Travion Williams, led the SEC, all gone. And his backup, Deshaun Corbin's season-ending injury. So all those things added together, but it starts to me up at the offensive line. If you can't protect your quarterback, if you can't open up running lanes, that makes it tough on your offense.
Good stuff there from Robert Cessna. Okay, Robert, what have you seen from Kellen Mond in year two under Jimbo Fisher?
Well, we've got to rely a lot on what Jimbo sees him day after day. He's obviously got a lot stronger, a lot smarter in his reads. But when you look at it, why doesn't he run more? That's a question a lot of people are asking, because with the running game so strapped, because of the line, because of the young running backs, I think moving forward, we'll see him get involved more in the running game. And maybe this weekend, it'll be interesting to see, because 2 years ago, he had a big run against Arkansas. Last year, he didn't run that much. So I think he's going to run more. The receiver maybe not lived up to expectation. At least I thought they would be better, but they've had too many drop balls. Damon Osmond, by far, has been the best receiver. But getting back to Mond, the question a lot of people ask you right now, is he a championship-caliber quarterback? And I don't think that's a fair question, because he doesn't even have what I would consider right now above-average SEC offensive line. So if you're not getting the line production, it's hard to be a all-SEC running back, an all-SEC quarterback. But I do think Mond is improved. To what degree, that is yet to be determined. They've only played four games.
Right, and you talked about Mond. Like you said, 2 years ago, he was taken off. And you know, last year, it looked like maybe Arkansas had a game plan back there with John Chavis maybe being familiar with Mond a little bit. But Arkansas has been giving up some big yardage to running quarterbacks this year, and the guys that are a little less talented than the A&M team.
Well, you know, once again, I think Chavis knew Mond. He knew the system. I think that was a great advantage. A&M jumped out to a 7-0 lead. I don't want to say they eased up, but we see this all the time. People get an early lead. Other team comes back because the sense of urgency. What sense of urgency? I'll be interested to see it on Saturday, because I think both teams better have a sense of urgency of what they did last week, or better yet, didn't do last week.
Yeah, very good stuff there. Okay, so flipping over to Arkansas side, you know, you're familiar with Nick Starkel from his time at A&M. What did you like and dislike about his game?
Starkel's got a big-time arm. He throws the ball very deep, accomplished passer. He's been in, let's say, two systems, three systems with Jimbo, Sumlin, now in Morris. So he should be well adapted. He's seen a lot of different coverages, been a lot of different things. Of course, not telling anything anybody knows. He tries to force balls at times. He's done that because he's got so much strength in his arm. Sometimes forcing balls leads to interceptions. He's not very mobile, so you know where he's going to be at. Mike Elko, I want him to come with a lot of different blitzes. Try to get him on the ground. A&M has had trouble sacking quarterbacks this year. So that should weigh in the Arkansas favor. But I think, once again, Elko will bring pressure. So you never know what people are going to do, because it's like Akeem Boyd as well. When you're playing a former team, there's a chance you might play your best game just because it's mano-mano. So I expect Starkel will have a huge game unless A&M gets some pressure on him.
Yeah, A&M could very well do that as well. Arkansas's offensive line just hasn't been looking great. Okay, so going back to A&M, you know, running back Jashawn Corbin was lost for the season during the Clemson game. Who have the Aggies relied on since Corbin's injury?
They really split between true freshman Isaiah Stoller, and he had the big fumble to start the second half on the first possession, 13-yard run. A&M still in the game, 14-3. He fumbled six plays later, 21-3. A&M's not in the game. Jacob Cabote, sophomore, CSF. These guys were going to be definitely 2-3, way behind Corbin. Corbin was going to be a 25-carry a game guy. So this was a huge loss, because not only do these guys not have running, they don't have blocking, they don't have reps going out of the field, out in the flat catching passes, which Jimbo likes to do in his pro offense. So this has been a huge step. A&M's running game should get better as those guys get snaps, but you just can't snap your finger and have 100 snaps in SEC competition. It's going to take 4 or 5 games, I think, for these guys to get to where they're a little bit better.
You mentioned it a little bit when we were talking about Starkle, but what do you think the A&M defense's game plan will be overall against the Hogs?
I think they've improved vastly there. They're 3 deep at every position. They've got cornerbacks to cover. This was their weakest point on defense the last 2 years. I look for them to man up a lot of times because I know Arkansas's got the hotshot freshman, but I still think they'll put their best guy on him, maybe give cover over top, but man up on the other guys and try to get pressure on Starkle. Make him throw the ball early or throw it in the coverage. I think A&M will bring pressure all the time unless Arkansas can get some kind of semblance of a running game.
Very good stuff from Robert Cessna, writer for the Eagle in the College Station in Bryan area of Texas. Before we let you go here, Robert, I got to ask you, what do you think of the game being played at AT&T Stadium in Dallas?
Well, it's mixed emotions. You see the AD, A&M's AD, has come out and said, he's more of a guy home and home. Even Bill Burns said that. A lot of people say that, but it does get back to a lot of things. Money being one, visibility being another thing, recruiting. So A&M still has 7 home games a year. I think, A&M's would probably want it home and home, but you know what? Money solves a lot of evils, changes a lot of minds, let's put it that way. So there's still four years left in the contract. So who knows? They could be positioning for a bigger paycheck. Who knows? But I think it has merit, but it doesn't have merits when it's a pair of 2-2 teams. Arkansas is going to get back to where they were under Petrino, winning some more games. A&M needs to do what they did with Jimbo last year. This needs to be a game that the nation pays attention. Right now, it's at 11 a.m. because you've got 2 teams that are still struggling to find their identity this year.
Yeah, that's one more thing I wanted to ask you. Jimbo was talking about on the SEC teleconference, this is a rivalry game between Arkansas and A&M. And, they have played each other for a long time since they were in the SWC. But does this game really feel like a rivalry from the A&M perspective?
I don't think so. A&M does not have a rival right now. LSU is getting that way. If A&M can go to LSU and win on the road this year or win on the road in 2 years, then it becomes a rivalry. It wasn't a rivalry when they went back playing each other before the SEC because Arkansas was more dominant than A&M. Now A&M's won 7 in a row. It's tough to have a rivalry when it's one-sided because you play lip service and say it's your rivalry because you don't want them to come up and beat you. But right now, A&M really doesn't have a true rival. And it's tough because they had Texas for all those years. But right now, until somebody wins a game that costs you a conference championship or a bigger bowl matchup or something along those lines, to me, it's just not a rivalry because A&M right now is pointing to Alabama. They're pointing to LSU because of all the off-the-field deals. They're not pointing to Arkansas.
Good stuff there from Robert Cessna. Robert, thank you so much for joining us. You can check out all of Robert's stuff on the Eagle, located in the Bryant College Station area. Thanks again, Robert.
Hey, no problem. Y'all be good.
Massage Envy with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home.
and take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Like I say, it's a mentality thing. You know, it don't matter what call the coaches give you. You know, you got to have that mentality as a player not to let your man catch the ball on you. And we just say execute at the end of the drive.
That's linebacker Dijon Harris on what happened to the defense during the San Jose State game.
Welcome into the Whole Hog Football Podcast. Seth Campbell, and we're going to join our roundtable guests today, Scotty Bordelon, Tom Murphy, and Dudley Dawson. And all right, guys, deep breath. It was a rough one on Saturday. You know, Morris said after the game that in the pregame he felt his team, you know, was a little loose and he tried to get them to focus. What are your thoughts on a team that is now 4-12 under Morris losing focus? We'll start with you, Dudley.
Well, it was a pathetic, embarrassing effort. I don't think you can couch it any other way but that. Seems to me that a team who had only won 8 out of its last 30 games should not come into a game overconfident. That's clearly what happened. They got out-coached, outplayed, and out-hustled, really. The San Jose State team just wanted it more.
What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, he said everything I would have thought to say. That's the standard line about who wins a game sometimes, and they did want it more. It's just unfathomable, I thought, that they didn't seem to have the drive to take care of business in this game. It's like they're looking forward to A&M, like they couldn't stand the prosperity of a one-game winning streak, like they thought all they had to do was roll it out there. And I don't know if that comes from the coaches and the players. Chad Morris said to us a couple times during the week, this team's going to have some stuff. They're going to be ready. And I think they were aware that they'd get a good shot, but just thought no way they could go in and win it. But I'll tell you this, you cannot minimize San Jose State's off week. They got a good scheme together, and they went out and executed it to a very strong extent, and they came in here and took the game.
Yeah, I don't know how much more I can add. Arkansas just wasn't focused, and Nick Starkel said as much after the game. And you know, whether he wants to admit it or not, I'm sure he had his eyes on next week or this week now. He's looking forward to playing his old team, and you know, probably didn't take San Jose State as seriously as they should have. Like Arkansas, like Chad Moore said it too, Arkansas is not in a position to overlook anyone. They are not good enough to just, you know, just go out on the field, Chad said, with the Razorback logo on your helmet and just go beat somebody. Their focus just wasn't there, and they got punched in the mouth on the first play of the game. Joe Fouché out of position, his eyes are in the backfield, lets a guy run by him for 50 yards. And San Jose State played with a lot more swagger, with a lot more physicality, and Arkansas didn't respond to it. And that's a shame, man. There's absolutely no reason a Mountain West school that was 4-23 in its last 27 games should come in and just embarrass you and control the game from the jump.
Yeah, the Arkansas defense, you know, not to mince words, they had a poor showing, as you were talking about. Fouché, his eyes in the backfield. You know, that's 2 weeks in a row that they've given up big plays on the first play of the game. They were only able to get 3 tackles for loss against San Jose State, 1 sack, and it's only going to get harder from here, guys, against SEC competition. We'll start with you, Tom. What do the Razorbacks need to do on defense to stay competitive against A&M?
They got to be better tacklers in space. They got to use their eyes better, as you mentioned, the Fouché play. Just be more physical. I mean, it was stunning that the lack of push they had. I mean, they stopped a lot of the between-the-tackles run plays, but just getting pressure on the quarterback – it didn't happen, and their guys had more open space to operate. Their receivers had more open space to operate than Arkansas's did, which was shocking. I do think, once again, that they were kind of looking ahead, and John Chavis, the former A&M assistant defensive coordinator, had a good plan for A&M last year, and I suspect that they'll have a good plan. They're going to look differently, but they've got to win some one-on-one battles. They've got to cover better, and no question in my mind it hurt that Monteric Brown was not available at cornerback, that they lost Jarquez McClellan for a few plays, and that there's just not enough depth on this team that you can overcome all those things.
Yeah, this team's got to find some pride. I think, like, they went down to A&M or went down to Dallas last year and played A&M pretty tough. And, you know, Kellen Mond, I think, gifted them a couple of interceptions, which, you know, gave Arkansas some chances to score and keep the game tighter than, you know, that I think the score indicated, as A&M, I think, controlled it, but Arkansas just kind of kept hanging around. But I remember I went back and watched the game this morning, and San Jose State's backup running back takes a carry up the middle for about 13 yards, and he's met by a couple of Arkansas defenders, but he keeps driving. San Jose State's offensive line comes in, pushes about 6 or 7 more yards downfield, and that's just like, that's a pride thing. Like, Arkansas has not shown, they didn't show any fight defensively, especially in the first half. I thought they tightened up a little bit in the second half, but, you know, when they absolutely needed a stop, they could not come up with any answer. And, I mean, you heard John Chavis say yesterday, he doesn't have answers right now, and that is really not what you want to hear after giving up, you know, was it 34 points last week and then 31 points this week and 900 plus yards to Mountain West schools. That's not going to cut it.
I am 5'9" tall, and I interviewed Josh Love and one of their linebackers, and they were the same height as I was, which was,
he's a former walk-on quarterback,
yes, which is something that just, you know, was mind-boggling for me, as well as Josh Love talking about how he knew what Arkansas's defense was going to do because the safeties were giving them a key. Now, I don't know what the key was. It's not my job to help Arkansas out and find it out, but I bet they got in some film study this week and tried to figure it out, because they just took advantage of them just pretty much any time they wanted to over the middle of the field.
Yeah, that was rough. And, you know, you're talking about, Scotty brought up, Chavis didn't have any answers to what was happening against San Jose State. And I think that just brings up the question, guys, do you think John Chavis's defense will be successful here at Arkansas? We'll start with you, Scotty.
I don't know that I've got much reason to believe that it will be successful. Like, and I think it starts up front. Arkansas got absolutely zero push. They got one sack, and it was in the third quarter the other night. And again, a Mountain West Conference team that was lost 11 games last year, and I think maybe 11 the year before. Just, that's not going to cut it. And we talked about it, I think, on Sunday afternoon. Arkansas's defensive line right now is just not good. And you're having to rely on a one-handed Mateo Soli, who, you know, can't get off as many blocks and shed blocks like he wants to because he's got one hand. And on the other end is Gabe Richardson, who does a lot of talking and not a whole lot of, there's not a whole lot of productivity there outside of what he did in the Portland State game. But again, he did that against an FCS school. And then you've also got Jamario Bell, who's basically playing on one leg. And then I think I texted Tom and Bob this yesterday. Arkansas's top four defensive tackles finished with a combined 2 tackles on Saturday. Rakeem Boyd and Nick Starkle had that many after Starkle's picks. And I think it starts there, because if you can't get push, quarterbacks are going to be able to do whatever they want. And Josh Love, we saw what he could do with some time. He picked Arkansas's defense apart, and Chad said he had enough time to sit back there and eat a sandwich while he was doing it. So it starts there, and obviously you got problems in the secondary. Getting Monteric Brown back will help you out a little bit. Ladarius Bishop was probably pretty wide-eyed the other day in his first start. Linebackers have to be better too. I mean, just all the way around, I don't see it getting much better.
What do you think, Dudley?
John Chavis, when he arrived here, there were plenty of people excited about his hire because of what he's done in the past at different SEC programs. There was also a segment of the fan base who thought time had passed him by because he had athletes at Texas A&M and they didn't have as good a defense as maybe many people thought they would. I thought that was poppycock to start off with. But do you like the word? Okay. You know, it's the nicest word I can use in the podcast. Thought that was kind of, you know, didn't take that into being there at first. But now I wonder if Chavis's defense is great when it has great players. I mean, I think that especially when it has great defensive ends. I watched NFL football on Sunday and saw a bunch of his former players making plays. And it's just, I think it's a combination of Jimmy's and Joe's and scheme. And for whatever reason, it is not panning out right now. And I think if it continues till the end of the year, I don't think this is breaking any scoops. I don't think they'll fire the coach, but I think the staff will look a whole lot different.
Yeah, I can't argue that point. And I'm with you, Dudley. He's had some talent to work with at A&M and LSU, and those LSU defenses were studs. the people who think that the game has passed him by, you look at the numbers and they haven't been good lately. And so Arkansas definitely needs more talented impact guys. And we thought Scooter Harris would be having a better year. Don't know exactly what's happening with him. He said he was under the weather a bit the first couple of games. Certainly not enough depth on the front that they impact the quarterbacks like they'd want. And everything flows from that point, as Scotty pointed out. So we thought that the youth in the secondary would be a little bit better in coverage than they've been so far, and that they'd be at least 3-1 at this point, and they're not. And so you look for answers, and right now, giving up 503 yards against San Jose State's not where you want to be. And I'm with Dudley. If the numbers don't improve the rest of the year, you're probably going to see changes there.
All right, flipping over now to the other side of the ball, we'll talk about Nick Starkel. He said he's done with gimmicks as he tore up his Justin Bieber shirt, which got a reply from Justin Bieber. After his 5-interception game, how do you think Starkel will play against his former team? We'll start with you, Doug.
Well, first, I think it's too late to say sorry. I thought it was a fun little deal, but I get it, and you know the Biebs seems upset about it, but you know maybe he'll get over it, with his Baldwin wife there or whatever. But Starkel, I think, was part of the mindset that they were just going to come in and roll, and I think he probably. You know, I saw him on the SEC Network, saw him on some college football shows. I think he was enjoying being the darling last week. So I see why he wanted to make a statement by ripping up the shirt and telling everybody he was sorry and was going to do better and be more focused. That's a thing that I think is good. Now we'll see if it pans itself out. He has always been the risk-reward guy. Ben Hicks is game manager. John Stephen Jones is gutty. K.J. Jefferson's going to play 4 games somewhere down the line. There's people worried about him already transferring. But his coach and him, I've talked to both of them, and they both believe he's better off redshirting this year and playing another year down the line when Arkansas should be better. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. But I think Starkel was the head with the football team, and his inability to get the passes where they needed to be, and I realize he takes some more chances, but you apparently can't do that against San Jose State, and you're definitely not going to be able to do it against SEC foes.
Oh baby, oh. I didn't have any problem with him and the Beaver stuff. I just think it's fun, and the fact that he ripped up his shirt, I don't have a problem with that either. It may be unnecessary, but I guess it was a symbolic way of saying, I'm just going to focus on football. And he finally got Beebe's attention. Scotty's going to hit us with some numbers in a minute on Starkel. I just think that he trusts himself and he trusted his receivers that if option A was not open, option B, well, I can throw it to option C just with a glance. And a lot of times there were defenders there, or he overthrew guys. I mean, I went back and looked at some of the game so far, and he overthrew Mike Woods hot on just a little screen thing over to the left. He overthrew O'Grady in the end zone on just a touchdown play. And he got over-amped up once they fell behind, and that's what they said he pressed a little bit. Got to put a little more air under the ball on some of his routes. You know, the throw to Mike Woods was perfect for the touchdown early in the game. So to answer your question, I think he is going to play better against A&M, but I think A&M is going to come after him. They've gotten a lot of sacks in the last 2 games. 6 under John Chavis 2 years ago. They sacked Austin Allen 6 times, and they sacked Ty Story 5 times. So he's going to feel some heat in this game.
Yeah, on the Beaver shirt, I don't know. I found it to be kind of a gimmick just to tear it up. It's like, that's not the reason you threw the 5 picks. Like, that Bieber shirt is kind of what makes you. Like, that's part of your personality. Be the same person, just clean up some of the mistakes. I don't know how he's going to play this week, because he's obviously going to be – there's going to be a little bit of added emotion, and you put that emotion and the stakes that Arkansas finds itself in inside of an NFL stadium in that atmosphere, and I'm sure it'll be a pretty crazy crowd. Maybe, I don't know, maybe for an 11 a.m. game it might not be, but that's a lot. And coming off a big game, you're kind of tearing up your t-shirt and all that stuff. Like, I didn't really get that. But man, one thing I found watching the game the other day, even if he does make throws, he's getting hit a lot. And I charted him, I think he got hit 9 times the other day. That's entirely too many times. And if that's happening against San Jose State, Lord have mercy, help him. Texas A&M's defensive line is physical. They put up a really good fight against Auburn last week. Auburn's probably top 2 or 3 most physical teams in the conference. I had Nick with 9 inaccurate passes, 3 more interceptable passes, and 3 more passes tipped to the line. That's a problem that he's had the last couple weeks. And on 16-plus yard throws downfield, he's 3 out of 12 for a touchdown and 3 interceptions. He's got to be a lot more sharp. And some of that comes down to, you know, he's getting hit when he's releasing balls, but he's also not reading coverage very well downfield sometimes.
Yeah, and I think he felt that pressure, and he was delivering some of those passes, some of those over-the-middle throws, anticipating pressure. And the coaching staff had to tell him to trust your protection. But when you've been hit, got hit 9 times, it's just
hard. At least 9 times, yeah.
So this is going to be a difficult game.
I also think that you know, you have to put some of this on the players, but you cannot not put it on the coaches. I don't think the play calling has been very good for most of the year. And I know that they have deficiencies and they're trying to do what they think is best, but I don't know that that's playing to the strengths of their football team. And I think that's got to be, addressed as well. I'm sure that everything's being addressed this week. A lot of people want Craddock out as the offensive coordinator. I think he's a good dude. I don't know. You know, I'm not analytical enough to know if what he's doing is right. But what I do know is that it is the head coach's, and I like Chad Morris, but it's the head coach's decision on what defense you play, what offense you play, what calls you send in. He's got the veto power there. And those two, the thing that gets me most, those two fourth down plays, you've proven you can't run the ball against them already, and you dive into the
he just run it right into a mass line. Of people.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they finally it clicks, and they say, hey, what if we did this misdirection thing, and they get 16 yards. You should have tried that the first 2 times. I realize that's revisionist history, but still, you know, I'm sitting up there, really, they just ran into the middle. Now, it's sad that you have an offensive line that can't push San Jose State's guys out of the way and get 2 yards, but that's where they're at.
Speaking of the offensive line, what did you think about Joe Craddock's comments about the offensive line at the press conference? And in case you missed it, when he was asked about the offensive line, paraphrasing here, offensive coordinator Joe Craddock said, well, I don't know why they didn't play well. Maybe you should ask those guys. We'll start with you, Tom.
Well, and then there was a little bit more to that also about how, yeah, I think they did play pretty good last week, but not as good this week. Yeah, you want accountability on his part, and he did take a lot of accountability in other parts of his presser. But also, it's a challenge to the players. You know, what happened? I mean, they blew holes in Colorado State last week. They walled people off. They were physical. And they didn't do it against San Jose State. So I know people make things out of every comment. They parse every statement that's made. But I did not have that big of an issue with it.
What about you, Scotty? What do you think?
Yeah, when he said it, I'm doing the live updates and I'm kind of typing what he says as he says it. And I was like, that kind of raised an eyebrow with me. But I think that starts with Dustin Frye. Like, he's got to light a fire under those guys. Like, those guys are playing for their job. And I looked, rewatching the game, at one point, I think Austin Capps was out, and so you got Kirby Adcock in there at left guard. And Dalton Wagner was out for a little while at right tackle, so you've got Ryan Winkle in there. You're down 2 starters, and the entire right side of your line is Ty Clary at center, and there's a true freshman, and there's a redshirt freshman, and then Adcock on the left side, and Cunningham on the left. And Cunningham probably would not have played last week if Colton Jackson was available. So you're really playing 3, maybe 4 guys that not ideally you don't want to play. And so, I mean, it's not really a shock to me that they didn't play bad. This group's not not that good, kind of like the defensive line. They're struggling just on both sides of the ball up front. It was a little bit strange. I will say that comment was a little odd. I think Joe, as much kind of crap as he gets from people, I find him to be probably the most insightful of the coaches that come in on Mondays, and that was not the answer I was expecting. I thought he'd bring it a little more.
I would say that when they arrived here, when this coaching staff arrived here, they were very excited about getting the Arkansas job, and this was going to be their Clemson-type situation. And then they got here and looked at what they had and went, oh, my God, we had better players at SMU, you know, and especially in skill positions and stuff. And I think that's been mind-boggling to them, as it should be to Arkansas football fans. I do think that Coach B recruited very well in his first 3 years, and then his assistants went away and he got other assistants, and they didn't recruit well. And for a long time, Arkansas hasn't recruited well at linebacker and in the secondary, and it is coming home to roost now. And really, you've got defensive line guys who you were excited to get, but really haven't lived up to the hype. Now I know that Sosa may get double teamed a lot, you know that, but when that happens, somebody else should be making a play. That's why I hear everybody calling for. A lot of people calling for Morris to be fired. And I still think, while I question some of the decisions that him and the coaching staff have made, all I read on our message board was how it was a dumpster fire here at the end. And so does a guy get 2 years to put out the dumpster fire? I mean, I think you give him the opportunity to rework that staff if things continue to go the way they are. And then the third year, if you don't see any improvement, then I think it's fair. You know, and I'd also think if you fire after 2 years, it's going to really limit the possibilities of a big time coach coming here, because he won't feel any comfort.
Interesting points.
Speaking of comfort, and you know, Juracek was at the Touchdown Club this week, and he said that he believes Chad is the man for the job and the football team is improving from year one to year two. For you, what has to happen that you have to see for you to believe that the football team is improving under Chad Morris in year two? We'll start with you, Tom.
Just looking better in games. I mean, the Portland State game, they didn't look very good. You thought that would be – a lot of reserves would be playing in the third quarter. Like the coach said for Portland State, you know, their mamas – the third stringers are telling their mamas and girlfriends, hey, I'm playing on Saturday. Didn't much happen. So I think they're going to play better against A&M. But they've got to be able to keep this team together, because there's rough games ahead. There's losses ahead that, you know, everyone counted as an L before the season started. So they're going to have to upset people. And you just have to show better. You just have to convert on fourth and ones. Yeah, I thought they should have kicked a field goal on the first fourth down play myself. But the team needs to look more focused and more prepared, all those kind of things. And I'm with Dudley. If you fire your coach after 2 years, after what they inherited, I don't think that's a good message. There's going to be upset fans if they go 4-8 again or 3-9 again, which looks like where they're headed. But you've got to be able to show some type of continuity if you believe that this program is going forward, as Hunter Juracek said.
Yeah, I think Tom hit it. And you asked, I think last week, you asked Chad, what would it mean for you guys to go out and just show better than they did in week one against Portland State at home? And you know, they just didn't. And I think, like, for there to be any positivity moving forward, I think Arkansas has got to show better. And like Tom said, they've got to look more focused and prepared. And I think they've just got to be competitive somehow in some games that they're not supposed to be in. You know, when Brett was trying to turn this thing around, you would see them play hard. They would play pretty well, and they would find themselves in some games that they really shouldn't have been in from a talent standpoint, shouldn't have been there. And that game at Mississippi State, I think when they were number one in the country, Arkansas hung around with them until really late, and they shouldn't have been in that one. But they were, because they were focused and prepared and ready to go. And I think Arkansas has got to do that to give – fans some hope, and even recruits some hope about what's coming next. But I don't know that this situation is like that one. I don't know that this team can do that.
Simple answer is to win football games, but I don't see many wins down the line. I got a feeling that Ty Story is licking his chops. Can't wait to run against the defense he used to run against in practice, you know, if he gets the chance. The SEC games, there may be a couple there that you can hang, you know, and if things go right, if their quarterback throws five interceptions, you know, if their team doesn't show up and ready to play Arkansas because of Arkansas's record, as we think Arkansas did against San Jose State, then maybe you get a win there. But that's the big thing. The perception right now from the fan base to me is that it might have gotten a little better, but it's not that much better. It's not going to get that much better, and we're tired of 7 years, which is always going to be hanging over whatever coach is here. The frustration of the fans from when Coach Petrino went in a ditch to now, the program has fallen off. And you know, there was a lot of bring Bobby back this week, which is just again, I don't have any problem saying this. He's the worst person I've ever met that's not incarcerated. He's a great football coach, a great offensive football coach. But and if they do hire him back, I'll cover him, and I'm sure it will be interesting. But I don't think that's going to happen. I just think they are in a situation now where their perception, after this game especially, and maybe it was already there, is that this coaching staff is not up to the challenge of SEC. Winning SEC games, and the only way you're going to change that is to win one or two, and there's just not – this is the wrong league to be rebuilding in.
Very good points, and I want to thank everybody for coming in today. Scotty Borderline, Tom Murphy, Dudley Dawson giving you their thoughts on Arkansas's past game in San Jose State and the upcoming one against Texas A&M.
This was a blast.
It really was. I'm so glad
we used a lot of different words in the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice job pulling your thesaurus out.
Yeah.
Well, Arkansas is going to play 11 a.m. against Texas A&M at AT&T Stadium on Saturday. And hey, I think it's appropriate that we end this with a Justin Bieber quote. As Justin Bieber once said, hey, never say never.
The great urban philosopher, Justin Bieber.
The Whole Hog Sports Football Podcast is produced and edited for airship by me, Seth Campbell. Special shout-outs to Robert Cessna, Tom Murphy, Dudley Dawson, and Scotty Bordelon. You can read more from Robert Cessna on theeagle.com. You can read more from Scotty, Tom, and Dudley on wholehogsports.com. Thank you to our sponsor, Massage Envy. By supporting them, you are supporting us. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. Subscribing and sharing is one of the best ways to let your friends know about the podcast, and it also helps us grow. Theme music is by Silent Partners. I'm Seth Campbell for Whole Hog Sports. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you back here next week.